Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The message, In God We Trust, will greet South Dakota students when they return to school next month. The American Civil Liberties Union is creating a new position as a result of South Dakota's riot booster laws. And Seth Tupper writes about Senator Mike Rounds' multifaceted fundraising apparatus. Seth Tupper is with us today as part of our weekly Dakota Political Junkies session. He's an enterprise reporter for the Rapid City Journal, and he joins us from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in SDPB's Rapid City studio. Hey, Seth.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And with us by phone from Madison, we have John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. Welcome back as well, John.
Thanks, Lori. Glad to be here.
All right. Let's start a little bit with U.S. Senator Mike Rounds and following the money, because it's not as easy as you think, maybe, Seth Tupper, to figure out where all that money is coming from for a campaign. Walk us through sort of why you wanted to sort of look at this, for starters.
Well, to me, I just thought it was really reflective of the advantages of incumbency and, you know, how difficult it is for somebody to try to challenge an incumbent. Because, you know, Skylar Borglum from Rapid City here, state legislator, who said she's going to challenge Senator Rounds in the primary election next year, she formed her fundraising committee in June, starting from zero. And at that point, Mike Rounds already had $1.4 million in his own campaign committee account. But he doesn't just have a campaign committee that's helping him directly or indirectly with fundraising and spending. He has these other entities, including he has what's known as a leadership PAC, a political action committee, which he calls the Peter Norbeck Leadership PAC, named for Peter Norbeck, a legendary former governor and senator in South Dakota. And that had $67,000 on hand at the end of 2018 at the time of its last report. He's also a part of what's known as a joint fundraising committee with 15 other incumbent U.S. senators who are up for re-election next year. And a joint committee, which is something that was used by Kristi Noem to great effect during her Donald Trump fundraiser in 2018, that allows innumerable different committees to join together and pool campaign contribution limits into one bigger limit. So whereas I might only be able to write a $2,700 check to you because of campaign contribution limits, when I go to a joint fundraising committee, they can compile all those $2,700 limits together and I can write you a check for, you know, $27,000, and then they split it up evenly among everybody who's in the joint fundraising committee. So he's part of one of those, and that's already given him $53,000 roughly after it was just organized not too long ago. And then he also has he's part of another joint fundraising committee called the Rounds SDGOP Victory Fund, which hasn't been very active yet, but is there and could get active. And then he's got the American Chemistry Council is spending independently promote the Rounds campaign, and that group said it was spending $69,000 recently on a two-week run of radio and television ads. And those are independent expenditures, which are unlimited as long as there isn't any coordination with the candidates that are mentioned. And so you've got all that, as you mentioned, I call it a multifaceted fundraising apparatus, which is really what it is. And you got all that stacking up against, again, Skylar Borglum, who started with zero.
So before we get to that, I want to, the American Chemistry Council can spend $69,000 without coordinating with the candidate. So that means U.S. Senator Rounds can't talk to them. Like, what are the limitations to that? Because clearly he knows.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you'd have to delve into the case law and the FEC rules and everything. But, you know, essentially it just means that to have that privilege to be able to spend unlimited amounts as an independent spender, you have to not coordinate that spending with the Rounds committee. So they can't meet and say, hey, let's make our ads look like this and let's run them at this time and let's do this. There needs to be no coordination at all on those things.
Interesting.
And of course, there's all kinds of suspicions of whether there is ever any coordination, but you know, that's...
And why the Chemistry Council? And John Hunter just knows I'm going to pull him in at this moment and say...
Well, I like Seth's idea of writing $2,700 checks to you, Lori, for your next
year. I've decided not to run because I'd like to spend more time with my family. So
we'll set up a pact just for your potential future campaign.
That's the Seth Tupper line that I just use every time anyone says that. John Hunter, this is a really stark picture. Whether you agree with, you know, how campaign finance works in this country, you better understand how it works if you're going to run for office against someone like U.S. Senator Mike Rounds, against any incumbent.
Agreed. And I think the best we can come, you know, there are creative people, and the laws are written typically by incumbent members of Congress. And so yeah. There is going to be money there. I mean, that's just the reality. And whether you like it or not, as in your words, you have to be aware of it. And that's why I think really we should push for the kind of transparency as best we can and keep working on that all the time. And Seth has done a nice job in digging into this stuff, because most South Dakotans wouldn't know that without that kind of journalism. But candidates need to know about it. I think donors need to know about those. Voters need to know about those. They really, although I will caveat that a little bit, I'd rather the voters focused on issues and how their members will vote on things rather than who's raising the most money. I mean, it's interesting and it's relevant, but I'd rather focus on what they are, what's in their platforms.
Right. But John, this brings up the point that when we look at like the joint committees, these people are donating money for a number of it's not, maybe, is it an illusion to think that people are just giving to the candidate that they support because of their platform? People are giving to an idea. They're giving to a party. They're giving to an ideology.
Well, wouldn't you expect that that's probably increasing, that people are more ideologues than they were, and members who are loyal to the party line will benefit financially from that. So I think that's one thing, and that's part of the partisanship that we see, is that I think more members of Congress are turning over their votes to the party leadership and saying, you know, how am I going to vote? I remember asking the last time Tim Johnson stopped in to the Daily Leader just as he was completing his final term in the Senate, I asked just that question. I said, are more people turning over their votes to the party? And his answer was yes. So to me, that would be most of the fun of being in Congress, would be voting your own conscience and so forth. But again, you can see if you do vote as the group votes, then there could be campaign resources available to you.
All right. So along comes Skylar Borglum. And Seth, you did a profile of her, and you can find it at rapidcityjournal.com. And boy, I wish I could get the Rapid City Journal delivered to my front step every day, Seth, because
digitally, you can certainly subscribe digitally.
That I do. I do. And for the record, and then, but I just like the paper. So that's just me. All right. So Skylar Borglum is talking about the exhausted middle, in quotation marks, of the GOP, according to the headline. Tell us a little bit about your meeting with her and trying to learn about who she is and why she would take this on in her own party.
Yeah, I kind of started, the reason I wanted to do a profile was, you know, it was actually a question Noel Hamill asked me. He hit me up one day and said he heard she had a connection to Kimball. And so he said, so you probably know a lot about her, huh? That's my hometown.
Right.
I said, really? She has a connection to Kimball? I didn't know that. So, and it just reminded me that, yeah, what do I or anyone really know about her? Not much. She came kind of out of nowhere and won election to the legislature, you know, in 2018, was appointed first. And so I thought, yeah, I mean, there needs to be a profile done of her to, you know, who is this person? So that's why I did it. And also the fact, obviously, she's from Rapid City right here in our right. backyard. But, yeah, it turns out she's a person who's incredibly highly educated. She has five college degrees. Her husband has three, so there's eight total in their household. she has a lot of other diverse experience. She worked in pharmaceutical sales. She's worked in engineering. Currently works as a staff engineer at Respec, which is a business here in Rapid City. But this thing about the exhausted middle, one of the questions I really wanted to ask her was that, you know, by running against an incumbent in her own party, she's sort of alienated the establishment within the party. And it doesn't seem that the people who consider themselves to be more conservative, more right-wing in the party, that they're very fond of her either. We've had Phil Jensen, who considers himself a very conservative legislator here in Rapid City, wrote a op-ed piece for us recently where he took Skylar Borglum to task for some of her votes in the legislature. So she seems to have, as I said, alienated or at least angered or upset the establishment and the far-right faction of the party. And so I asked her, who's left that's going to vote for you? And that was her response, was what she called the exhausted middle, people who don't consider themselves to be establishment or on the far right of the party and are tired of sort of the factionalism and want more of a common sense approach. And that's her theory and of who she's going for anyway.
So she was appointed to the state legislature kind of from nowhere, or did she have connections with the party to begin with?
Now, as far as I can tell, it was kind of from nowhere. I mean, she moved to South Dakota in 2015. Her roots, just to get back to where I started, her mother grew up in Kimball. Her father grew up in Watertown. And so she does have, you know, connections to the state. But she grew up in Montana, in Great Falls, Montana, and moved around during her adult life and came to South Dakota in 2015. And so then within 3 years of moving here, she had filed a candidacy for the legislature already. And there was a seat in her district that was vacated by the death of Sean McPherson, who was a Republican legislator here. And so at the time, Governor Dugard took the action of appointing her to that seat. At the time, I believe there was a special session coming up, and it appeared that the logic was, well, you know, she's already running, and we need all the seats filled for this special session. So he appointed her, which was fortuitous for her, and then she ran in November and won. But yeah, she didn't seem to have any, you know, it was her first run for public office. She didn't seem to have any, you know, connections prior to that. She came in and won a race, and here we are.
John Hunter, what do you think, you know, a candidate like Skylar, so I like it when people run against, because I just think it's great to talk about ideas. That's kind of the thing I nerd out on. But do you think that it's good for the party? Is it good for South Dakota to have someone like Skylar Borglum starting a conversation, running a campaign against someone like Mike Rounds?
I do. I think it's healthy for democracy and for South Dakota. I actually appreciate the fact that she is not pigeonholing herself into a party line or into a particular faction line, that she may make decisions that either satisfied or dissatisfied all sorts of people.
Right.
Right? And I think it gets back a little bit to voting her own conscience. And in South Dakota, and Seth and I have observed this legislature for a long time, and most of that is people talking and trying to listen and trying to do what's best for their constituents in their district or for the state as a whole. And yes, there's party influence, but it's not really as extreme at all, in my opinion, as it is in Washington. So to have a South Dakotan say, yeah, I'm going to vote for this, which some people in the party like and some people don't like, and I think that's a healthy process. And it gets the focus back to issues rather than loyalty to the platform.
Right. And Seth, let's talk about a little bit of her legislative record, because some of those things that she alienated people like Phil Jensen about were things that she said the government shouldn't be involved in deciding anyway, and those are her conservative principles. Tell us a little more about that, please.
Yeah, that was fascinating to me, because among the people, again, who consider themselves a conservative wing of the Republican Party, they look at some of her votes. For example, she voted against the bill that's been getting a lot of attention lately that required the posting of In God We Trust signage in schools. She voted against that. That was one example. There were other similar bills that were all kind of social issue type bills that she voted against. And the conservative wing of the party looks at that and says, well, she's not a real conservative. And her response to that in my interview with her was to double down and say, no, I'm the real conservative and they're not. And the way she explains that, her logic is that she views conservative as people who, I had a quote in the story that says, governments should stay out of people's business unless there's an absolute demonstrated need to get into it. That's her view as she stated it. And so that's where she's at with it. And it's kind of an interesting approach. I mean, a lot of times we see politicians try to fit into one mold or another. And she's saying, no, the mold that you're trying to put me in, you have a wrong idea of what conservative is, and I have the right idea. Again, whether that's going to work or not, whether the exhausted middle that she talks about will actually support her and come out to vote, you know, remains to be seen. But that's the approach she's trying to take.
And speaking of South Dakota State Senator Phil Jensen, that In God We Trust bill was something that he sponsored, and then he wrote an op-ed for the Rapid City Journal sort of against her. So let's talk about the bill. Let's talk about In God We Trust. And John Hunter, one of the things I find interesting about this is there was conversation and debate about this legislation during the session, but it seems like there's going to be even more as it rolls out in South Dakota schools, as those signs start going up. People have a lot to say.
Right, and that's, I think, where we are in 2019, is that we're maybe not as lockstep in that national or state gathering under that banner. Remember that the In God We Trust is the official motto of the United States. So this is not something out of the blue anywhere. There are, and in South Dakota's official state motto, under God the people rule. So these it's not quite as far away as, you know, it's always kind of linked to hyper-conservative people that say you want to put religion back in. Now it is in, but it's not far from where we were founded and where we have been as a nation all along. There have been some talk of, you know, being able to say in God and Allah and other such, you know, in we trust in many gods or something to that effect, or we trust that in science we trust.
Yeah, I think some students in Rapid City went to the school board asking to sort of expand the artistic representation to include those things. Go ahead, John.
Right, and even in ourselves we trust, which I guess kind of gets away from what the founders had in mind in that. So yeah, I think there will be discussion, but at the moment, at least, it is the law, and it's required by the school districts, and the law actually requires the state to defend that, appropriate money to defend that in case school districts are sued over that issue. So, yeah, there may be talk, but at the moment, it's in law, and it will happen.
Yeah. Seth Tupper, Senator Jensen, said this is a historical reaffirmation of the principles our country was founded on, but In God We Trust wasn't adopted as the official model until the 1950s. It was on the money earlier than that, and the Civil War came back off. So some people are criticizing this as an effort to say this was always part of our nation's motto, but in reality, it kind of comes and goes in popularity as secular, as people sort of grapple with this. What are your thoughts, Seth?
Well, it's been a continuing argument, and I'm always fascinated by, you know, we all want the founders' intent to be whatever agrees with us sometimes, right? I mean, people on both sides of this argument, including Phil Jensen, would argue, you know, our founders intended this, and others would point to Thomas Jefferson or others who were maybe less religious and say, no, they intended for a strict separation of church and state. And it's an argument that just seems to never be settled and continue. And, you know, we're right now on the forefront of that, as a lot of national media outlets are picking up the story about what's going on in South Dakota and, you know, whether this is an appropriate mixing of church and state and whether it's not. And I've been somewhat surprised that there has not been litigation over this yet. I mean, we've seen a lot of litigation over social issue type of bills in the legislature. So it'll be interesting to see if any of that develops or if anybody further. I mean, the bill itself, as was noted, includes a section that says, you know, if anybody sues over this, the state will pay for the defense. I mean, it's an interesting piece of legislation when, as you're writing it, you're anticipating that somebody's going to sue over it, and then you have to put that into the bill. So for that to have happened and no lawsuit yet is a little surprising to me.
I think 10 other states have similar legislation now, so this is part of, I think you can say, a national conversation, a national trend, and you could argue that's how it came to South Dakota. It was because other states were doing it and was part of a statewide effort. And John Hunter, it strikes me as, you know, when we talk about, you know, In God We Trust appearing on money and then disappearing on, you know, from money and when the motto was adopted. Times change. You know, fast forward 10 years, this could be a different national mood. It's kind of hard to paint that sign over, though.
Well, and you think too, but you mentioned that it was the 1950s that was adopted as the official motto. The motto before that, of course, was E Pluribus Unum, and so you wondered if all the non Romans or non-Latin-speaking people protested over that. Say, we have a motto that no one knows what it means. So there may have been some controversy at that point as well. So I would guess no matter what is in place, then it's not, you know, it won't be embraced by the 100% of the citizens.
Yeah.
But to your point of it, you know, kind of getting painted over, you know, I don't think any school districts are going overboard as far as spending a lot of money on this thing. I think they'll all probably follow the law to a pretty tight standard, which indicates size and that sort of thing. So,
how big is it supposed to be, though? Isn't it 12 inches by 12 inches?
Right, right.
And Seth, how big is the stencil that Rapid City used? It does not look 12 inches by 12 inches to me.
I haven't seen it personally. I couldn't tell you. I mean, it does look bigger.
In the photograph, it looks bigger, but I can't confirm that. So,
yeah, and the law says no smaller than 12 inches wide by 12 inches high.
Yeah, John,
right,
go ahead.
The font is that size, but remember, all letters are different size, right? And capital letters are larger than lowercase letters, so...
Right, I interpret it as in
total. Don't sue about that.
I interpret it as in totality. Like you could take a 12-inch by 12-inch piece of paper and paint it on there. They mean every letter has to be 12 inches by 12 inches?
I think the law says the font, F-O-N-T.
The font.
The typeface. So, I mean, it's you could also say it's. I mean, that's what the law says. So, I think it has to be substantial, and you know, and then you I mean, you'd want to put it in a place that it fits. I mean, that we wouldn't. You wouldn't want that on the door. It couldn't fit on a door. You know, you'd want it above the windows or someplace where it can actually fit. So, yeah, well, maybe we'll see some stories along the way as 200 different school districts grapple with this.
You have to wrap it around something in some smaller schools. I didn't think. I thought it had the whole thing could be on a 12-inch by 12-inch. I misinterpreted that. I'll have to go back and look.
Well, we'll find out. That's my understanding.
Interesting. All right. So, speaking of those sort of national politics, let's Seth talk a little bit about this idea of during campaign season, during the debates, South Dakotans opening their checkbooks for U.S. Senator Mike Rounds, but we're also getting some ideas, according to a report in the Argus Leader, of who they want for president and who's making money there. What do we know about our support in this state of Democratic candidates?
Well, we like Trump. So, you know, this was a fascinating story to me because, you know, obviously we would expect in a state that went overwhelmingly for Trump when he was elected that, you know, he would be receiving the most amount of money of any of the presidential candidates so far. And that was the case according to this story in the Argus Leader. But you know, for me, it took me back to 2016. Early on in the Republican primary cycle, I was assigned a story to call some Republicans around Rapid City, prominent and otherwise, and just figure out, you know, who are they supporting? Because at that time, you know, the Republican field was not quite, but almost as crowded as the Democratic field is now. And at that point, very early in that process, I couldn't find anybody that wanted Donald Trump, you know, to win the nomination. And it really shows what an incredible journey he went on to not only win the nomination, but then win the general election, and how far he's come, and that now his support is so solidified within South Dakota. It's
okay. If we follow that trend, Cory Booker is going to be president.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or the candidate.
Wouldn't try to predict
because he is not getting any donations from South Dakota right now. John Hunter, who is starting to show promise in the state from the Democrats? Anyone?
Well, I mean, it does seem to follow kind of popularity, and I mean, national popularity as well. Bernie Sanders is, I think, leading the charge among Democrats. You'd probably expect some from neighbor Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota. She's in the top few. Elizabeth Warren, Joe Biden. The name that might have jumped up a little, Beto O'Rourke, is higher maybe on the list. But, you know, if you split the limited amount of money among 22 or 23 Democrats,
right,
none of them are going to get very much from South Dakota, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and a lot of those folks are running around Iowa, but not
yeah,
really crossing the border to spend time in South Dakota just yet. We'll wait and see. We'll hold our breath.
North Sioux City.
Yeah. John Hunter with the Madison Daily Leader, thanks so much for being here with us. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Lori.
And Seth Tupper, RapidCityJournal.com. Seth, thank you.
You're welcome.